everybody. I'm an ag. My name's Bobby.
Hi.
And first of all, let me just say that I know both the previous speakers well, and I'm not going to talk about any criminal activity. I would like to provoke some thought about some issues and subcommittees I've been involved in. However, I'd like to keep it not maybe as provocative as possible. I guess it's interesting being involved in sharing about history because two people can be in the same room at the same time, hear the same information, but yet tell the story uniquely different from one another. And we come to the table with our own perspectives and lenses and experiences, and it seems as though there's a great benefit from internalizing it the way that we do. And those experiences and communicating and sharing it with others is really valuable. I've been asked to talk about conventions, which was always a real unique passion of mine. And I guess the reason why I found it so appealing was because, provided us all an opportunity to be as one in a fellowship under a common theme, and the enthusiasm and the excitement that surrounded conventions was so attractive to me. And I really felt that, especially being involved with convention committees, that would reflect out to the committee or the fellowship as a whole those things that we brought together internally in order to put the convention together was really important. And it also provides you a great opportunity to gain a lot of spiritual growth through tolerance and acceptance, because the stressors are really unique, the opportunities are great, just to kind of interface with another part of the world as opposed to doing things internally. I was introduced to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in 1973. I kicked around the fellowship for 8 years before I surrendered. And so I was part of NA during the first East Coast Convention, which was the first convention on the East Coast. There was 180 people at the first East Coast Convention. The second East Coast Convention, there was 282. And it really covered, the majority of Narcotics Anonymous. Now, it's interesting, looking back, from my first meeting on, the fellowship was mostly comprised of middle to lower class Caucasian males. There were very few blacks in Narcotics Anonymous at that time. And the drug of choice was primarily heroin and speed. There was a few people that smoked grass and did glue. And out of the 282 people, putting together, it was really hard to formulate a convention committee on the East Coast because, you combine those talents and it really wasn't a skill set connect with universities and, establish budgets and actually do things responsibly. However, with that said, the inspiration, and I think, you heard a lot of the speakers over the past day or so, talk about how things are motivated, or how we're motivated to do things. And I think, pride is one of those things that motivates us. And a number of us got together knowing that, having had the experience of the first and second East Coast, right across the border of Philly, we wanted to be ahead of any other metropolitan city having a convention on the Eastern Seaboard. We knew Atlanta was going to have something. We knew Florida was going to have something. Virginia, and even here in Connecticut. So we put together a convention in 30 days. And just that, Philadelphia has, we claim to have the second oldest structure in the world. letters I have dating back, you know, from Jimmy Kinnan, Bobby Barrett, actually, trying to fulfill a request that we had sent to them, to the World Service Office in California, to help us start a area. And one letter in particular, where Bobby suggests that we go meet with the intergroup in Philadelphia to have them instruct us how to do it, because we certainly don't have worship together out here. And as a result, our first area meeting was called the Philadelphia Intergroup of Narcotics Anonymous. So there was this established, there was roots. You know, I mean, we actually had people in 1982 that had, you know, 10 years, you know, clean time. And as a result, you know, there was some skill sets. There were people around that could actually do something. So, taking the role where it was suggested to me to kind of get this thing kick-started, I went to area services, and not sure if I was even GSR or whatever my role was, but we essentially told, and this was commonplace in those days, we told the area, well, we're going to have a convention whether you like it or not. And that was just the way we did things. And as a result, Johnny S. Turned to me and he gave me $100. So, you know, that was some incentive. And Dutch turned to me and gave me $100. And I looked at Dutch, because he was part of the plot, and we said, oh shit, now what are we going to do? So, you know, the brilliance of recovery addicts, you know, we went to Atlantic City and put our money down, doubled it up. Now, I'll go back to the idea of history. I'm glad Dutch, I don't think he's in the room. So I can tell the story anyway I want to, right? It's the argument that went from Philly to AC on whether we would bet on the roulette table on red or black. You know, it's a little bit inconsistent with what he says. But clearly, clearly, I would not suggest among others that there's any spirituality in this. And an act of randomness. However, there was exactly 283 people that showed up at our first regional convention, and it was a one-day affair. We had kind of plotted with New York, and Tony Daddio was our spiritual speaker. No, Terry Ryan was our spiritual speaker, which is better yet. And it was a great, great affair. From that, I had gotten involved in World Services, and eventually, was the RSR of the region, and in 1984, I believe, the World Service Conference had some concern because the fellowship was growing, and up at that time we had, outside of California, the conventions, the world conventions that occurred both in Atlanta, Miami, Milwaukee, and New York, where beginning to New York was probably the largest. We had about 1,200 people. And those of you that don't know, but it was, the Vista Towers, which of course were destroyed on 9/11. And there was some real concern expressed by the fellowship that conventions and the money and the revenue stream that was being brought through conventions need to be captured, through World Services. And this created a lot of debate. And I guess maybe, there's be two issues that, and I really find all of the comments and conversation that's been going on this weekend to be really healthy, provokes for all of us a lot of thought. and hopefully stimulate some interest so that we can have some deep, healthy conversations over the direction of the fellowship. On a personal level, my involvement in Worlds, I was then in 84 elected as the World Service Conference Subcommittee Chair. Served for the length of that term until the World Services decided to have a convention corporation. And the convention committee was an expression of the fellowship. But I guess, maybe what I want to say is that, like all of us who, this Narcotics Anonymous gave us a life. And I can understand how with such sincere conviction, that we have this deep-rooted belief in that this works, and God forbid anything happened to us, or this fellowship, we're all doomed. Our first tradition states, and our personal recovery depends on NA unity. And without us being together, we're all going to suffer. And clearly, differences of opinions and disagreements, I used to always say there's a wrench in every toolkit, and it's our responsibility as a fellowship to be sensitive to other people's opinions and to make this more inclusionary, not exclusionary. There's room in here for everybody. Look at our meetings. And I really believe being involved, and I hate to say this, but some of the inner circles that occurred in World Services during the early 80s, I saw some very dreadful manipulation and political decisions being made, And as benevolent as they may have seemed at the time, and as much as we could rationalize and justify those decisions, you just got this unspiritual sense about that. But I've never seen anything whatsoever in my recovery that has, from coming from any support of our service structure whatsoever, that has ever affected my relationship with the newcomer. And I really believe that that's where the spirit lies. And, that if we all believe that this is a gift, from God, and we believe that with our mind, body, and soul, then clearly, even no matter what setback we may face, we all have to have faith that we will find a self-corrected path and through our conscience, our group conscience, we'll be able to take this fellowship to where it needs to go. But the two things I guess I want to say to provoke some thought, because everybody is concerned about where the money goes, and the idea that we have lost this spirit of the seventh tradition. And think about how, the newcomer goes to a meeting, it's on a Friday night, and they then in turn know that they're going to a dance that evening. In all likelihood, they're going to put $10 towards going to the dance as opposed to putting it in the basket. And, maybe it's a thought to think about how we really do things. And can we become reliant, maybe is the question, on just those revenue streams that circle around merchandise and conventions? Or can we become more reliant on our contributions that are made at the group level to really satisfy and express the sentiments of the fellowship? So I'll just leave you with that thought. Thanks for letting me share.
Because all these guys are And on that, I went to the second Georgia convention in 1982. I had a year clean, a little over. And I met Bo S., the chairman of the World Literature Committee. He's one of my best friends, I can fuck with that. And he sat with me and talked to me for like a half an hour. And I was so impressed that this guy, I quote this big title, was interested in what I had to say and what was going on with me. And I have tried to emulate that for the rest of my life. That when somebody comes to talk to me, I want to know what, you know, what can I do to be of service, and then, you know. I was at Narcotics Anonymous in 1981 in a treatment center in Hampton, Virginia, and I'm not using that day. So my clean day was September 6th, 1981, and that was the week I found that name. I've been looking for recovery for 2 years before I got my first ending memory. And my travels in NA, there was a guy named Larry North who's passed away that some people have talked about. We call him the old man. He had a cowboy hat. He was a rough Irishman. And he had been an accountant in Park Avenue. So he went from Park Avenue to Park Bench and wound up in Narcotics Anonymous. And he taught a lot of us about service. And I followed him all over. And I followed him all over. And that set me on fire for the International Fellowship of NA. I was 3 years clean, and I left the Chicago World Convention, where I heard some guys passing out a flyer for the first London Convention of NA. And I told my sister, man, you know, we got to go to this. And she said, we're broke. Are you kidding me? We just spent the whole week in Chicago at a magnificent mile in the hotel. And everything. Well, it's God's will. And my sponsor sold me his house with no money down on the Chesapeake Bay and handed me the key and moved to Florida. And I had filled out one of those credit card things, and because you have a house, you're stable. So when I came back, I opened the mail and there was a new credit card. And I called my sister and said, guess who's going to London? And we got, and I bought two tickets and we flew to London and I sat in on the committee meetings and I helped them with their convention because they'd never done one before. And Thursday night comes up and the guy's saying, well, you know, we have the venue, the place, we have the venue for the weekend. And we set up a lot of meetings for all day Saturday and all day Sunday because we've never done one of these before. We didn't know the dress Friday night meetings. But we have a venue and everyone's here, so we decided we would open up with an American style speaker meeting. And he looked at me and he said, Eddie Kermit, we want you to share. So 3 years clean, I got to be the opening speaker for the first London convention in the end. Yeah. And 3 years before that, I was in a ghetto with a needle in my arm. And if you told me that that was the future, I would have told you, out of your fucking mind. Because it was bad. And, you know, and because of that, I met other people in other countries, and I got to go to Germany, and I got to go to France, and I got to go to all these places. There was a World International Committee that was falling apart because the chair, our friend Roger from New York, wasn't fulfilling the duties. And so I got a call from somebody that said, come to New York, we're having a meeting of the World International Committee. And I showed up and became a member, because you're a member when somebody says you are. Back then, you're a member. You got voted. So I got to participate. And we created a subcommittee called the World International Committee because we wanted the World Fellowship to know that to us, they were just as important as H&I and PI, that people in foreign countries mean that much to us. And so we set up the committee. And we'd go and have these meetings, and then we'd see in the news line, the World International Committee sent off to Japan. We go, well, when did we vote on that? We didn't vote on that. And so, you know, shortly after it was disbanded, because the job was being done pretty much by the offices, become historical, right? What happened, as you all know the history of how we created a world war and all that, with the, in the mid-80s, when we were being in service at that level, they decided, since the board trustee members were coming to all these conferences everywhere, that they should become assigned to different world subcommittees. And when that happened, the objectivity apparently became lost. Because now each board trustee member had a vested interest in each one of these subcommittees. And then the next thing is the idea of having a world inventory where everybody would look real close here and look at all the stuff that is in their subcommittee and spend 2 years there in this way while this whole instrument was being changed to what it is today. The inventory process, a company was hired to do a financial inventory of the spiritual fellowship. And the financial inventory by a company that was created was paid, $100,000 or more, did the inventory and then was closed up. And what they said was that we have too much repetition of service, duplication of service. And in a cost-effective world, that's a smart thing. You don't want to keep doing, you don't want to pay that the same thing done over and over again. But what we call it in NA is checks and balances. And so what happened was the idea of eliminating world-level committees because you would have many people coming to one place to do things and keeping track of all that. Why not just have a list of people who are good at something, bring it together for a project, and the project comes home, which cost effectively makes a lot of sense. The only trouble with this is nobody gets to learn how to do it. When you don't have subcommittees, nobody gets to learn how to do it. And the whole, one of the things I like about this weekend is that people are more and more talking about the spirituality of what happened rather than the dates, the times, and the places, which is how we've done history things for a long time. We don't want people are interested in things. The concept behind everything that goes on in services is the word trusted servant and where you put the emphasis. And the people that I learned under, the literature people, they believe that we have trusted servants. We trust you to serve. Go get the information, bring it back to us, and give us both sides of the story, and we'll have an informed group conscience and we'll tell you what we want done. And we trust you to serve. If you're not serving, we're going to get you out and get someone else in who will do it. Now, the other side of the coin believes that we have trusted servants. We take the time and care to collect the right people, and we trust you to go do the job. Go do the job. If we wanted to do it, we'd do it ourselves. Right? And one side of the coin believes in openness above the board, as many people in on the decision-making process as possible, so that we're all going in the same direction in the same way. Another group believes in slow, small committees with a lot of decision-making done at the top, and their interest is about effectiveness and efficiency, and getting the job done quickly with the least amount of effort to do it. And what I've come to learn, and what Bobby touched on, is that the people who do service at all levels, including world level, they love NA just as much as you and I do. Or they wouldn't be sitting on the other side of the table arguing with me. And everything that I've seen in NA that I don't agree with, I know from my heart, because a lot of these people, my friends, I've known for 25 years, they love NA just as much as I do. But the situation that's been created today is set up with a board of people that have a basic veto power over the entire fellowship. Because when the board was set up, it was said that the fellowship could direct the world board, and if the world board is can do a cost feasibility study. If they don't think it's feasible, they can turn the fellowship down. And then it takes two-thirds majority of the entire fellowship of NA to tell this group of people to do what needs to be done. And when I saw that in the motion, I knew that Root Conscience was dead. Just food for thought. Help you, Lord. Right, be grateful you don't live in here.
For about 2 years, And I could get an AA sponsor, but how do I get an NA sponsor? And I'll tell you what, he shared his stuff. He shared how he was feeling. He shared that he wanted to get these feelings out. He wanted to share a Narcotics Anonymous message. And we sat around that table. And there wasn't a dry eye in the place. Because that powerlessness of what we felt, because we couldn't do anything. And Carlene made the motion. We want to have a subcommittee called Sponsorship Behind the Wall, and we're going to make a difference. And it was funny because Now, when I first got clean, they told you to join a group, right? So I joined every group I was involved with. I was good at it. And I lived in Rhode Island, which was right on the border of Connecticut and Rhode Island. And a lot of my groups were in Connecticut, a lot of my groups were in Rhode Island. And I got involved in groups in Connecticut, I got involved in Rhode Island. They said, get involved, and I'll tell you what, I was involved in both areas, both regions. I was involved in the New England region. I worked my way down the service structure, there's Gary, World Age and I, and then I got involved in World Age and I, and I was at, and I was also going to the Connecticut region, and I was sitting at the Connecticut regional table, and sure enough, that motion came up, and I got involved in that sponsorship behind the walls, because I really felt like it was something that was needed, and I was still involved in the New England region, at the H&I level, and I was World H&I Pool Member. And I was asked to go out on these speaking commitments. And I was going on these speaking commitments sharing about H&I and Narcotics Anonymous. But people were finding out that I was involved in sponsorship behind the wall. And you know what? That's what they wanted to hear about. And at the time, I would share our experience, strength, and hope that we were going through. We went through, I don't know how many subcommittee meetings. Some of the work we did, we like really broke some ground. And I went to World H&I and I said, World H&I, you know, this is something that World H&I should be involved in. Can't you feel that powerlessness? And they said, and I'll never forget this word, and I still hate this word today. It's not our purview. Anybody know what purview means? It's not our job.
It's not our business.
And I think that's bull. And I fought against it. And I got to tell you guys, I worked hard, I fought against it. And every time I go out of a World H&I committee meeting, that's what they wanted to hear about, sponsorship behind the walls. Because it was really what was needed. At the time, we had plenty of facilities, the work was getting done, addicts were getting the message behind the walls, but they weren't getting the sponsor. So, what we ended up doing was I was sharing things like that. And we were still doing the subcommittee meetings. I was meeting in Connecticut. I don't know how many meetings we had. And we broke some tremendous ground. I remember we had some meetings where we had to go to, like Doug Fumans was a big man in Connecticut. Jimmy here? Whatever. He was like, this was the guy. VOC, this is the guy to go to. And we had to go to his, we had to like learn how to be orientation leaders. And you know, we took that on ourselves, me and Carlene, and I think there was one other person that, so we could tell you how to be a leader, how to be a volunteer for DOC services. And we did that, and we wanted to do that. We wanted to do whatever we could because I really felt, and we all felt like that's what we needed to do. And around that time, we're all found out. I used to say this to us and them, and I just want to tell you one thing. It's all about love. Because we all love Narcotics Anonymous. I heard from you, I heard from every one of the speakers today. It's we love Narcotics Anonymous. Because we know if it wasn't for an egg, we wouldn't be here. And I'll tell you what, we're all getting gray hairs, we're all getting older. And when I first met my wife, I'll tell you what, I had full black hair, I could see gray, and I had hair. You know, today I don't. And thank you, NA, that's possible, and I know that. So what can I give back? So I got a problem, and World told me, once again, sorry about us and them, but they told me, they said, you know what, you can't be involved in sponsorship behind the walls. Either you're involved in sponsorship behind the walls, or you're involved in the World Age and I. And I really have a stand against that. I told them to take me to World. age and I shoved as far as I could. Because I felt like this was the most important thing. And you know, we got behind it, and I'll tell you what. Because of Carlene's help and the people on the committee, you know, we've helped, I don't know how many, and I want you to share more on that. You know, it's funny, they asked me to share, and I just thought Carlene was just kind of like, said no, so she's let me do it, no. And then I asked her, and she said, no, man, and so she's a part, she's been the biggest part of this committee. And I'll tell you, if you don't have a commitment, Vital Steps Recovery, go out that door right there, there's a table. Get involved in it. Just think you can make a difference in adding behind the wall's life. You can help them write the steps. You can help them be a recovering member of Narcotics Anonymous. And the greatest thing about that is he can take it to the next guy. And that's how it works. All right. Because we get a sponsor now, he gets a sponsor, he gets a sponsor, he gets a sponsor, and they get sponsored. Because that is how this fellowship works. And the other thing that really got me mad, and why I kind of got a little bit away from writing the steps of recovery, was we were called sponsorship behind the walls. And I'll tell you what, it was sponsorship behind the wall. We wanted to be their sponsor. We wanted to help them write the steps. The only one thing we couldn't do was they couldn't choose their sponsor. That's the one difference. And around that time, I think World got resentment because I told them to shove it. They wrote a letter to the Connecticut region. And they said, we can't call it sponsorship because it takes away from one of our most important spiritual principles called sponsorship. I mean, this is the same body that wrote that sponsorship book, okay? I tell my sponsees they can use it for toilet paper. I think it's one of the worst pieces of literature in Britain. Just my opinion. I love it. Oh, I'm in?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I got one off. I'm done.
And, you know, letters like these get handed to whoever. driving with it, and he was all over the company. And so we started a committee, a subcommittee, an ad hoc out of Regional H&I. We met for a whole year, once a month, at different edit houses. And we put together the policy that is in our orientation package that really pretty much the same now every time that as it was in 1994. And we didn't finish until we finished. And what I can tell you is being on that subcommittee and also being on Writing Steps for Recovery as it is today, it always boosts us addicts who are passionately there to give back. There's nothing glorious, famous, well-known. It's just simply a committee to make sure that the addict in jail has an addict to write to who has some experience in writing steps of Narcotics Anonymous and living them. We put together 12 requirements for being a step guide. That's what we call ourselves, a step guide. And the first one that our recovery based in Narcotics Anonymous, we have Narcotics Anonymous clubs that were writing steps that we have been seeing at least 2 years. We started it out 3 years, and then after a couple of years, group conscience was 2 years, because the next requirement was that whoever was writing back, we could assure you, if you're in your cell receiving this welcome letter, that whoever's writing to you has done the first 5 steps in writing with an Narcotics Anonymous sponsor, and that they're continuing on that path, and that they go to step meeting regularly, and that they're willing. Originally, we said willing to come to at least 6 subcommittee meetings per year. But then we started losing addicts because we have one meeting every 7:30, third Thursday, Artisan Grand in Britain, downstairs. And, oh, you are so welcome. Everyone there is just there to help the addict. It's the least acrimonious service group of any sort that I've ever been a part of. It's part of why I love it so. So at any rate, we found that if we asked you from all over Connecticut to come at 7:30 every other Thursday, that we didn't have a great pool to draw from. So then we put it down to every 6 months. Then we put it down to every once a year, and that's what it is now. But what we started doing was whenever we hear that there is a learning day going on that we haven't been invited to yet, we find out who's giving it and say, would you like us to come? Would you like us to come? So that then we can bring it to every area and make it more available to every addict who might possibly want to help an addict who could be up, right? Who was up, who could be again tomorrow, depending on our choices. So once a year, re-upping, and the reason that we ask for that is because we want to continue to assure the addict who is writing for our guidance that we are still going to meetings regularly as a sponsor. NA is what we do, and re-upping every year makes sure that we're still literally on the same page. As Mark said, a bunch of us, I think it was three. Yeah. We went and sat in the DOC state office for 5 hours. We got thoroughly oriented, and he was quite surprised that almost everything they wanted us to do was a cut. It was in the combination of our traditions and our H&I guidelines. He said, oh, I guess you don't have everybody come here. And so we were appointed as official DOC volunteer volunteers. And so we put their information into our policy to make sure that everyone is aware of such things as not starting businesses with what was most emphasized, and we were thrilled about it, was respecting the privacy, respecting the spiritual and emotional vulnerability of the added behind the wall, and that we would do that first and foremost with our writing. So we don't share the name of who we're writing to with anybody. The only people that know that are the male party coordinators on our committee. We don't share our pen names. We use pen names because of a vast number of reasons. But we don't share it with anyone outside the committee other than the coordinators, what our pen names are. So it is a one-on-one. It's the closest thing to sponsorship that is within the service structure. And from day one, we tell them that this is a bridge. I'll work your steps with you the same way I do with my sponsee. But when you get out, I want to share with you what worked for me on the outside. Go to a meeting, get numbers. 90 meetings in 90 days, listen for recovery. Call people of your gender and develop your network so that you can find your sponsor that you choose personally. And we generally will write to you as long as possible, as long as you want to, through the PO box. But we still keep it anonymous as far as the addict was writing. So that it is, that is why the name changed to Writing Steps for Recovery. It was, as Mark described, strongly suggested, directed by World Service.